We want to talk today about what are some of the solutions to finding mold or to find out if you have mold in your home. And so we're going to take kind of a bird's eye view of this because there is a ton of information on this. We could spend many, many podcasts, and over time, we may do that. But for today, we want to give a great overview and get you some good direction. Our aim here is to guide. You are listening to the Manage Mold Podcast. This podcast was made for families on a health journey that need the real, no holds barred answers on how to create and ensure a healthy home. This show should be your launching pad to give you the information, guidance, and inspiration and clarity you need on your journey back to a healthy home. My name is Dean Malstead. You can find and follow me on Facebook and LinkedIn. Welcome to Manage Mold. Welcome to the Manage Mold Podcast. This is episode 3. So we want to recap what we talked about last time. In episode 2, we asked the question, how do I find if I have mold in my home? The reason we asked that is because it's probably the primary question we get from every client we have and people who make inquiries of us. So let's recap just a little bit about what we talked about. So we talked about some of the false realities that are out there. One of them primarily is that mold has to be seen to be a problem. If I don't see mold in my home, or if I don't see mold in my workplace, then the people who are complaining about being sick in this building must not be correct. They might even be crazy. Well, that's actually not true. We find in most of our investigations that much of the mold issues are hidden within the assemblies or in crawl spaces or basements of homes. I know other parts of the country deal with attic spaces being a major problem. Second thing is many of us, me especially, before I got into the industry 21 years ago, I didn't understand what water damage was. I didn't know it was a thing. I thought that meant that there was a lot of rain outside and a bunch of soil washed away. But there are many, many items within a home that can become water damaged. And water, as we learned in episode number 2, is the fuel for mold to grow. If you do not have the right amount of moisture, that can be liquid water or vapor water, high relative humidity is one way to describe that, mold won't grow. So if you keep your home dry, 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 you don't have any plumbing leaks, you don't have any seepage, you don't have any vaporization through your concrete floor, or into your basement or crawl space, if you don't have any roof leaks, if you don't have any window leaks, no condensation on the windows, when it gets cold outside, and you have no spills, and you can keep track of all your water, it all stays in the pipes or in the basins that it's supposed to be in within your house, and you keep your house clean, you probably won't have a mold problem. So mold also needs a food source. That's the third thing. So again, if we keep our house clean, 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 we will have a much less chance of having a mold issue, especially if we keep it dry and keep ahead of any of the water damage issues. Remember, clean in this case means small things. So we're talking about mold being very small, and it eats large things and small things alike. It doesn't need much of a surface area of some sort of food that is found in dust, perhaps. Maybe there's pollen or bacteria, sometimes other mold, and it will feed on those things if it has the right amount of moisture to go with it. So we also talked about being able to use our five senses to know if there's mold. And what we determined is tasting for mold probably isn't the best way to assess if we've got a mold issue or not. Obviously, we can't always see mold because it's smaller individually as spores or as particles than what the human eye can see. And once you can see mold, you have millions of spores, and you know you have a problem if you can see the mold. And we determined that tools are probably needed in order to do a proper assessment of things in the home. And too often, we are talking with people who are going from a sense of smell or a sense of sight, and those two things alone. Some people actually go by a sense of touch. They touch a surface and they determine by their touch that the surface is not wet, Meanwhile, I can come right behind them with one of our moisture meters and I can demonstrate that it's wet, and you could take apart what it is they're touching and you could verify that. So we know that our five senses are definitely helpful, but the tools that we have as an industry of professionals and that actually are affordable and available to any consumer out there in certain forms, they're all available to us so we can verify things in our homes. Finally, we talked about that sixth sense, that gut feel that something's wrong in the house. And that was my wife in our house about a year before I believed her and decided to verify things, and when we started finding issues in our own home. That sixth sense is one of the chief things that we rely on in our investigations in people's homes. When we visit with the clients, we're actually interviewing those clients to get a feel for or feel from them about what's going on in their home. And amazingly, our body was created in such a way that it tells the story oftentimes of the buildings or the places that we're in, and we don't always realize it. Sometimes it's a tone of voice. Sometimes it's a look of the face. Sometimes it's words chosen. Sometimes it's avoidance of one part of the house or a particular room in a house. And those are all signs and symptoms that we can pay attention to. So that's a quick little recap. Now, we want to talk today about what are some of the solutions to finding mold or to find out if you have mold in your home. And so we're going to take kind of a bird's eye view of this because there is a ton of information on this. We could spend many, many podcasts, and over time, we may do that. But for today, we want to give a great overview and get you some good direction. Our aim here is to guide. So we're always wanting to go through the principles, concepts, and cutting-edge techniques that are available today, share those with you so that you can be as smart as you can to be the hero of your own story. And as always, we always want to elevate and not devastate. We run into far too many people who are devastation in the lives of people who are sick, and they're not very helpful. They're not very hopeful. They're not very faithful. And it doesn't help the person who's sick deal with their health or their home. And so this is a place that you can come and get some guidance. So let's get started with that. Let's talk about do-it-yourself assessments, because we've got a lot of clients that are inclined to do it themselves, and partly because they're spending a lot of money being away from work doing medical visits, medical treatments. They're spending a lot of money on medical treatments potentially, or supplements that go with those, and they might be spending a lot of money on inspections to know what is going on in their home. And then whatever the prognosis is, they may have to spend additional monies on remediation. And if you got to hear the podcast number one, that was the backstory of my family. The Malstead family finds mold in their home, Lyme disease in their bodies. And we went through a bunch of those ugly moments of spending lots and lots of money. Well, let's talk through some of the realities of this. So the first thing in do-it-yourself assessment that you really need to consider doing is writing down a history of what has happened in your home dealing with water damage. Many people get defensive when I use the water damage word, phrase, or when others do that. But it's really important to really create an assessment, starting with a journal process of what has happened in your home. The journal doesn't have to be really long. Just take a sheet of paper, simply list out all the things, and you can even do it in reverse order so you go to the oldest things last. And write down everything that you can remember about any water spills, bathtub splashing, water leaks, water damage events, including drain backups. Be honest and be as accurate as possible, including dates, and then have room where you can put on that sheet of paper or another one what got done with each of those events. And there's a very important and very simple math equation that gets done with water events, at least ones dealing with plumbing for sure. And that is, if you know that 10 gallons or approximately 10 gallons spilled out of a pipe, and if you could somehow know that you recovered 1 gallon of the 10 gallons, you know that 9 gallons went someplace. and you need to find out, figure out, discover where that went. And you have to figure out what might still be wet, what might still be damaged. Okay, that's really important. Next one is write down any storm damage and flooding. So write down the history of water spills, water events that damage your home on the inside. Then write down any storm damage and any flooding. Again, we talked about this in episode 2. Flooding is one of those things that most people associate with water damage in a home. And most people associate flooding with storms or with rain. And in our case, as a business doing water restoration for 21 years, we actually associate about 90% of our water losses with plumbing events. That is something that a pipe breaks, a valve breaks, a drain backs up, or something like that. Remember, if there was a drain backup in your home dealing with storm water or with something with a city system, remember that that is sewage water. And it does not matter how clean the water looks when it comes out of the drain. That water was in the sewer pipe and it needs to be treated as such. The third thing is take a walk around your home outside and verify some of the following. Make sure that when you look at the landscaping, that all the rain and any snow melt, depending on where you live, can run away from the home and not get stuck by the home. Understand that a lot of landscape beds around perimeters of homes with rocks or wood chips or similar type things, a lot of those will get filled and refilled. And what when they get refilled, when they start sagging, that means that the dirt next to the house has sagged. And usually you have to pull the landscaping away, reset and add more soil that will shed water away, then put your landscape cover on top of that. Most people simply add more landscape cover, and what they do is they create a funnel effect underneath their landscape cover that they don't see or they don't realize, and that landscape cover is not enough to shed the water away. So the water runs towards the foundation of the house. And this doesn't matter if you have a crawl space or if you have a basement or even a slab on grade house. If you have a slab on grade house with no basement or crawl space and water is continually running against the edge of that slab, concrete is hydrophilic. That means that water easily goes into concrete. Concrete, especially if it's drier than the water, will take the water in. Okay? That's very important to know. Also check for caulking, flashing around windows and doors. Make sure all of that is in good order. Here's a little aside. Silicone always fails. No matter what commercial you have seen, we have done inspections for years. We have done water loss work for years and fire loss work for years. Silicone always fails, especially outside. Do not use silicone. If you go to remove silicone, you have to use a silicone remover to get the residues off because nothing will stick to it. Make sure your siding is good in good repair. There's no gaps. There's no holes. If there are gaps or holes and you have birds like woodpeckers or other birds that are similar looking for insects, usually insects that are found within the walls of your house are there because there's some sort of dampness or water. So if you see birds pecking a hole in the side of your house, it would be worthwhile to check and see if you've actually got a water damage issue on your hand at the interior of their walls. Obviously, if you have water, you have the likelihood that you could have mold growing in those walls. Make sure the roof and its flashing areas are in good repair. Do that consistently, at least annually, or hire somebody to do that. Check the exposed foundation wall for cracks. And this goes for crawl spaces, full basements, and then even slab on grade situations where there is a course of block. Wherever there's a crack in a poured wall or a block wall, that is a place that water easily flows through. All right, so that's three things. So that's writing down a history of water events inside the house, write down a history of the storm damage events, then do a walk around of your home and check those things. Once you're done with that, come back inside and do an interior check. Here's what I want you to look for. This is a do-it-yourself assessment. All of these things are dealing with water and water intrusion. Water is the key to growing mold, okay? So if you have these things under control and your home is clean and dry, the likelihood that you have mold is much less. On the inside, you're looking for stains on the ceiling, the walls, the trim, the windows and window trim, the baseboards. If you see water stains, the water came from somewhere outside of that room or came from a room next door or plumbing within a wall. Those are signs and symptoms that you've had a water leak or have an active water leak. If you have bubbled paint, especially on walls, maybe upper walls or corners of walls, you have a water intrusion issue and there is something going on with either the level above the room you're standing in or the roof. Buckled or deformed or discolored floor coverings. Floating laminate floors are a classic example of this, where the edges and the end seams are buckled and swollen. Those are signs of water damage. People who put laminate floating floors on concrete slabs that are damp, again, not by sight, not by feel, but by measure, can have trapped moisture underneath the floating floor that then gets to the floating floor and ruins that floor covering. So you always want to check concrete floors for moisture content, and this is using a meter or an official measuring device or system method for concrete floor moisture to determine if a floor covering is compatible. Understand that the marketing and the box label directions and sales material on some flooring will overstate its capability of performing well in wet areas. Laminate floors are key to that. Check for grout that is stained. You clean it and it restains easily after cleaning. If that's the case, you usually have damage behind that tile. If you have a shower or tub system that was installed over drywall and not over cement board, and especially if there was no painted on or applied membrane over the board behind the tile, you might have water damage and mold damage behind that tile. A stain that comes back and comes back and comes back in grout lines is a classic example of an interior wall damage being likely. Looking for water damage and stained sink cabinets. We see a lot of these. A few drops, a few drips, a little ring from a bottle that was a little leaky is not what we're talking about. We're talking about swollen or sunken or floors with holes that are in them or floors in cabinets that are falling apart. Those are usually signs that maybe the floor, that cabinet or the cabinet needs to come out and more investigation needs to happen underneath. If you go in, we're anywhere in your house and you have an earthy, a musty, a mildewy, or moldy odor, you probably have a mold issue in your home. I have a number of clients that tend to not use the mold word, but they might use a word that seems lesser to them, like mildew or musty or earthy. Those are three very common terms that people replace for the word mold. It's all the same family. It's all the same problem. You have a moisture problem someplace and you have microbial activity. Also, on your interior, look for worms, carpenter ants, termites, other insects that would indicate that there's water. There's a lot of basements that we go into and we can pull the corner of carpet back and we see a bunch of little worms. And those worms are there because there's moisture there. And so where there's moisture, you've got a good opportunity for growing mold. Let's talk about sampling. Sampling is a really interesting thing. And I'm going to concentrate primarily on one sampling method that is being promoted by one particular medical professional who has a following of other medical professionals and other people that he is certifying, and we might talk about him later on. At any rate, we're going to talk about ERMI and Hurts Me Too. I want to read you something from the EPA, from one of their papers directly. And this paper was written by the technical contact, David Kryak. He's a PhD at the EPA. And I want you to listen very carefully about ERMI. For those of you who have heard about or dealt with or performed the ERMI or have been told to perform the ERMI or the Hurts Me Too sampling method at your home, this will make sense to you what I'm talking about. Those of you who have not yet heard about ERMI or Hurts Me Too, be patient. I'm not going to go into great detail about it. I'm just going to go into detail about some of the issues that I need people to think about. And there's some questions that each one has to answer themselves about why they're using this method. So at another date, we'll probably bring in an expert or two to talk about the ERMI so that it's not just looking like my opinion. But here's the paragraph published and written at the EPA. It's the Environmental Relative Moldiness Index, a research tool. That's a key phrase, a research tool. It goes on to say, as research continues, the index will be refined. At this point in its development, the ERMI should be used only for research. The ERMI has not been validated for routine public use in homes, schools, or other buildings. EPA does not recommend that homes routinely be tested or sampled for mold. Testing may be done for research. Testing may also be useful to help characterize or identify mold problems in some buildings. Physical inspection, that's what we just talked about. Physical inspection for water damage and mold is a key part of current EPA mold remediation guidance. That's the end of the paragraph. So this is a research tool, meant to be a research tool. It involves approximately 1,200 homes originally that were tested in a very certain way. This was with a vacuum cartridge, measured out 18 square feet in two different room areas, vacuum for 5 minutes each of those areas, send the vacuum cassette in for its special analysis at the lab, and you get a result. The first 1,200 approximately homes were tested in that fashion. And now every subsequent test that is run or analysis that is run on samples that are taken now are compared back against those first 1,200 homes. Okay? So this is kind of like the president's physical fitness test for your home. It's comparing your home to the first 1,200. And that's important to know. I think most people don't know that. The next thing for any of you who are ERMI fans or have used the ERMI or are considering using it is that if you notice, if you're getting the recommendation from your medical professional, they are telling you to use maybe a certain lab or maybe a certain method for collecting a sample, which is usually some type of a Swiffer cloth. Understand that a Swiffer cloth is not a sterile cloth. It has additives, chemical additives in it that may affect the sampling methodology or the lab analysis, when those things are sent in. You've got to consider that. You've also got to ask the question, because ERMI is a super powerful tool. It goes to the DNA level. You have to ask the question, if you're one of those who has sent off and received a Swiffer in a little Ziploc bag to do your sampling with, the first question is, who put the Swiffer from which box, being handled with gloves or without gloves? Where did those gloves come from? And where did that person come from that morning? What is their house like? Because all of these things would be factors that could influence your Swiffer that you pull out of your Ziploc bag that came from a lab. I haven't been to any of them to personally visit the rooms, but those are the questions that I have and that everyone else should have, and these need to be answered. We should be using sterile materials, I would think, because when we get swabs from labs, those come in an individually factory-wrapped package, and we want those to be as little contamination as possible, okay? Have you read through the information about ERMI? Have you read through anything different than what the medical professionals have told you? It may be. Because there is an entire group of medical professionals that subscribe to one particular man's version of how this ERMI and his design of the Hurts Me Too should be used. Let's talk about the Hurts Me Too for a moment. The same medical doctor has determined that only 5 of the 36 on the ERMI panel, only 5 of the organisms are super important to know. Meanwhile, in sampling I've done over the last 5 years, I have items that are part of the other 31 group in the ERMI, and then some items that aren't on the ERMI that I find making people sick in their homes. And so that doctor should answer why a cheap test is better than the full price test and why 5 of these organisms are the only 5 that might be toxic for some. So how and why was the ERMI created? Have you read that? Do you understand why it came to be and who was part of that process? Do you know how the lab processes the samples? Have you called a lab and asked them to go through how that works and how your method of sampling can affect what their analysis might end up being. What would the ERMI developers and researchers say the results of your sample mean? Would they approve of your sampling method, where you're wiping and how you're wiping? If you're wiping in 4 or 5, 6 different rooms and you have a certain result back, it might tell you that there's mold in the house, if that actually is an accurate sample and there was no false positive or false negative action to that, but it really doesn't tell you where the problem is. Have you considered the sampling method that you use and what results mean based upon how you're doing the sampling? That's really important for anyone who is doing sampling in indoor air quality. All of us who do that have to think why and how we're doing what we're doing, so when we get the lab results back, we know what they mean. Do you know that the ERMI lab analysis may contain false positive or false negative information based on several factors? That's worthwhile knowing. Did you know that it may take several podcasts to accurately and completely discuss and show why ERMI may or may not be the best sampling method for you to use? We are barely skimming the surface on this one sampling method, but it is the one that seems to have taken the nation by storm because of a very specific movement out of the medical field. And there's a lot of these questions that when I talk to clients, they've never actually considered these things. It's just assumed that people who are in certain professions are doing the thing that's best for you. And I will tell you, there are problems with ERMI and with the HERTSME 2 sampling system. And I want you to know about those. We'll talk more in the future. We'll bring some people in and we'll get their info. So we've got other do-it-yourself sampling methods available. There are a number of opportunities in the box stores of the world and now on Amazon and other places to buy the little Petri dishes. They're little plastic dishes with covers that have kind of a gel substance in them. You read and follow the label directions, do what they say, and some labs or some retailers will send you or sell you this Petri dish. And if it simply grows the moldy stuff inside, that's what you're left with as an answer. And there are some labs that actually sell you the analysis with the Petri dish. So once you get the sample taken, you send it into the lab and they send you the results back of what actually showed up in that dish. There's some positives and negatives to that. I used to be against it, and more I'm actually open to the idea of it if we're doing it for the right reason and knowing why we're doing it, so that when we get the results, we know what they mean. They can be helpful. Did you know you can also send in bulk samples? That would mean you could actually take your furnace filter, HVAC filter, and other things that would collect sample material, particles out of the air over time. You could actually send those directly into a lab. If you find a lab that will work with you as a consumer, and you could do likewise with swab samples. I'm not going to say a Q-tip, but we would call them swabs in the industry. Or you could even do lift tape samples. There are some companies that make actual lift tape plates with sticky substance on it, and you can use those, and you can send those into a lab. There's actually labs, and there are people who do training who encourage types of clear Scotch-type tape that you can use to do lift tape samples. With any of this, I need you to know, if you don't know how to do or what to do or why you're doing it, I would strongly suggest not doing them, because you're going to get results that might actually do you no good. The information might not be valid, and it might not be helpful, and it might concern you, cause some anxiety for no reason at all. So just really think through why you want to do this. Do you understand the methods and implications of how you sample if you choose to do this? And then ultimately, you could actually go out, you could purchase your own assessment equipment. You could purchase a small vacuum pump, and you could purchase little air cassettes that you mount to that vacuum pump and take your own air samples. We'll talk about this more, but I'll tell you, taking an air sample in the middle of a room or in the middle of a level of a home is not indicative of what is going on in each room of the home, much less in the room of a home where the sample is taken in the middle of the room. We actually have a sampling protocol we use in our company. We dynamically scan every home in a room from edge to edge, and we can move around and we can see in real time what is in the air. We don't have to wait for lab analysis or lab results. And so this is the new and the cutting edge, and there is some pushback against it, but the technology is solid. It actually started back in the 1990s as anthrax detection, and it is simply getting better week by week. And there are more things coming to this piece of equipment that we use that is going to absolutely change the industry and change the way people's homes get assessed. So there's some cool stuff coming out. That might be out of reach for most people because it's quite, it's an expensive piece of equipment to buy and maintain. But there's some smaller things that you could buy yourselves if you know kind of what you're doing and you get to the right places to read and study some of this, if you're really serious about doing it yourself. And, you know, for some of you, I don't blame you, especially those of you who are on your second or third inspector or second or third remediation company, and you just can't find that you trust anybody. I get that, and I don't blame you. The main thing I ask you to do at that point is read. And I would also ask you to very carefully consider staying away from social media groups. There are some good ones. There are some really fantastic posts in some of these social media groups. Let's say some of the groups on Facebook. But there are some really crazy answers and really crazy ideas that people present and then people go try. And I've had posts where I've gone in and I've tried to give some good guidance, and people have kind of done what somebody else has said because I happen to be a professional. Regardless of whether I took my family through this or not, they believe somebody else who's a novice or a homeowner who is kind of put out, and they're kind of done dealing with professionals. Again, I get it. I don't blame them. But then the next set of people get hurt financially, get hurt health-wise when these things happen. And I'll tell you, I'm going to make an apology kind of for our industry at this point. We should be a solid group of professionals by now. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of growing up that needs to take place in our industry. I'll dare say it needs to take place in the medical industry also. I deal a lot on that side of things. And a lot of us have a lot to learn. We're all practicing, so don't expect that any one of us is going to be perfect. But I'll tell you, there should be ethics. There should be a good moral background to the people who are doing this work. And there should be really good guidance for anyone who's going through this. But you guys need to read, and find the best of the best in the professional industry and follow them and see what they're saying, okay? When in doubt, try and get a hold of a professional site or a professional that you believe you can trust and pose the question there. We're going to give opportunities in our organization with the Manage Mold piece for that to begin to happen. We're going to start growing a community, and we actually want this to include online summits. We want to do live events, not even just in our area. We're actually interested in doing live events all over the country and bringing people together. In fact, we'd even love to bring clients and medical professionals, remediators all in the same room and let everybody talk. I think we've got a lot that we could share with each other and a lot that we can learn. So there's some cool stuff coming, and we're totally excited about it, and we can't wait to get a lot of this stuff going. All right, so we're going to touch on one more thing. We talked about a lot of do-it-yourself. Indoor environmental professionals, inspectors, remediators, hygienists, whatever you want to call them. I really believe we need to deal with that in its own segment, and we're going to deal with that in the next podcast, okay? We're going to define some of the terms that are out there because it's a little bit confusing who the players are and what their roles are, what their expertise is. But in short, let's say this. When you get to a point that you can't find the answer and your gut tells you at the very least that there's still a problem in your home because you feel symptoms or you know symptoms in yourself, you see it in family members or friends, you need to start trying to find a quality professional who's got experience and who's got equipment. Experience and equipment together is an amazing thing. And I'm going to tell you, this is what makes our situation so unique. And this is not what I really thought I would be doing in life at this moment, but I'm going to tell you, it's a very interesting predicament to be a restoration professional, a contractor, someone who does remediation, and to have your own family get sick in your own house have problems. But then it gave us an opportunity to climb up a really sheer cliff and attain the top of a mountain at a point in about 2014 where we were in the middle of overcoming all the adversity that we'd come up against, and we'd learned so much, more than I ever could have imagined. So once we came out of that and we actually got healed from our Lyme disease issues and mold toxicity issues, we had kind of a package that was really rare in our industry. Here's a family, and it's not just mom and dad, it's mom and dad and 8 of 9 kids. There was 10 of us that went through this all together and came out the other side in really good shape, amazing shape from where we were and what was happening to us. And so we put that together with our 21 years of experience doing restoration, taking homes apart, putting them back together, and creating and doing methods that are better than what the current code methods are to put rooms and homes back together that won't fail and have the same issues as what they had. You put those two things together, number one, that's a powerful combination. And there are a few other professionals out there that I know and that I've got to meet now. And we want to build a network and make sure that those people are available to everybody who needs to know, that also have their own stories. And it's pretty cool to be with these people. And I'm telling you, we all have hope because we all went through it and we all came out on a much better side of it. And this is the stuff that we want to bring to you and the guidance we want to bring to you. So we're going to talk more about the professional side next time. And then pretty quickly in one of the upcoming podcasts, we're planning to bring on a special guest that we've had an amazing relationship with for a little over 2 years now. And that man is the president of a company that brought us a piece of technology that has absolutely changed our life. And it has absolutely changed the life of many clients that we deal with because of the way we can assess homes now. And we'll talk about that in the future. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about professional inspection in the next podcast. Let's talk about the results that you guys want. You guys want a clean and dry house. That's really what you want. Whether you know that that was the term or the phrase or not, that's what you want because that's where you get healthy and that's where people don't get sick. So often when we think about this, the mold that we're finding in homes is hidden, but there are some issues that might also be right out in plain sight in front of you. All you got to do is know what to look for and start looking for the things that are different in your house. Go around with a flashlight and go to the edges of the room and look at everything. And by the time you look at all of the baseboards in your house, you might determine that there was 10 lineal feet of baseboard that just looked different than the rest of the baseboard in the house. Well, go look at it again. Maybe it's water damage. Maybe it's a sign that there's something going on there. Water damage indicators are the most common and easy way to find where a mold problem is in the house. I'm going to tell you, there are some homes I've been in, and I just had one last week. It was absolutely perfectly taken care of. There wasn't a sign or a symptom anywhere except one little spot in the utility room. In that utility room, I could see some water damage from the past. But it didn't seem like it was enough of a damage spot to create the elevated mold counts I was getting throughout this beautiful home. And so I'm going to tell you, there are some times when it even stumps the professionals for some time until we can do more discovery, more inspection. So don't expect that the things I'm sharing with you are going to be the 100% answer for you to be able to find these things. But I'll tell you, in a lot of cases, this is how simple it can be. And at the very least, you might be able to point a way to an inspector in your area who may not be quite as knowledgeable, but who has some tools, and with the right measurements, you'll figure it out. So also look for things like dark spots on walls or above showers in the bathroom, or you get to that room in the basement and when you cross the threshold of a door, or it could even be the main or upper level of a home. I've had that happen. You literally cross the threshold of a door and you can smell something different. It smells earthy or musty. There's a mold problem someplace. You got to find it. Okay, there are resources and tools available for the professional that consumers also have access to. So you don't have to be a licensed or certified person to buy some of the equipment that we have access to or the training that we have access to, or the books that we have access to. We're going to make as many of those resources available to you and links over time that we can, as soon as we can, so that you can understand what those look like. Some are more expensive and some are less expensive. We've talked a little bit about water moisture meters in the last episode, and there's probably a lot more we should cover with that. And we'll do our best to do that in the future to give you a good idea of what might be helpful, what might not be. If you go to buy anything to help assess your situation, please know why you're doing it. Don't just do it to do it, but understand why you're doing it, what these things are capable of giving you for information, how they operate. Don't be afraid to call the manufacturer and ask questions, or the distributor. And you need to know that you know how to use them correctly. Because I've got a number of clients who've bought some devices to try and measure things, and they don't use them correctly, and they're getting false results. And in some cases, some of these people are getting more anxious, which makes them more sick. And so I don't want that for you. So just understand those things. Understand what they mean and what they bring to you, those tools. And then, believe it or not, for some of you, this is going to be hard to believe, but there are some super quality inspectors out there, people who have the right tools, who have the right experience, and they've got the right heart attitude that can assess the air that you're breathing, and they can do non-invasive scans and some creative things to determine if you have problems in your home. We're a company that does that every week, and we've got great success in finding things, in being able to pinpoint and minimize the damage that is done during remediation, because we can say it's these three walls. It isn't the entire level of the house, and we don't need to burn the house down. And so that is kind of a rundown of what it seems like, and what we hear you guys are looking for results is how do we go about, and what are the things that we can do ourselves? And when we've kind of gone above and beyond what we can do ourselves, or if we're not interested, at least we know the information and we can hire a professional. Next podcast, we're going to talk about the professionals. We're going to talk about the indoor environmental professionals and all the different titles that they hold. So that is going to be super important to be here for, because it's going to teach you about how to look for the right type of people, how to get them in your home or your building and get the right kind of assessment. So remember, for your home, if you can be ahead of this, keep your home clean and dry. That means the mechanicals of the home too, not just where the dog spilled from the water dish and not just where the bathtub splashed over, okay? You have to be aware of the mechanical systems and the drainage systems of your house. That's very important. And then if you can do HEPA vacuuming, the more you can HEPA vacuum, the better off you're going to be, and the cleaner your house is going to be. Every time you use a quality HEPA vacuum in your home and you're using that machine going through the home, you're not only cleaning the surfaces, you're also scrubbing the air. So you're making the air cleaner. So we want to help you be the hero of your story. We are here to help guide you. We're here to elevate and not devastate. And we hope you enjoyed this podcast. We'll see you on the next podcast. We'll talk about indoor environmental professionals. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to the Manage Mold Podcast. Do you have a question that you'd like me to answer raw and uncut on the podcast? All you need to do is head over to Apple Podcasts and do three simple things. Leave a rating and review telling me what you think of the podcast. In that review, ask anything you want related to your home's health. And if you want a shout out, leave your Instagram handle or name. That's all. Then listen in to hear your question answered live, raw, and uncut. This is Dean Malstead. Join us next time on Manage Mold.